Welcome everyone to another episode of Kiwi Talks. My guest today is an amazing voice actress who is best known for her work with Valve, and in particular playing the villain intelligent computer system from Portal, GLaDOS. I'd like to welcome the amazing Ellen McLean. How are you doing?
I am doing fine. Thank you so much. Should I refer to you as Kiwi? Or should I use your given name?
You can use my given name.
Okay, thank you, Reese. Some people don't want people to know their given names.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm happy with either. I didn't intend for me to get known as Kiwi online, but hey, it's okay.
Well, you just roll with these things. Your handle, Kiwi Talks. That's great. That's a great name.
Thank you. So I wanted to ask you about GLaDOS in terms of the robotic effect that was on the voice. Did you know that was actually going to be on the voice when you voiced it? Did they tell you they were going to do that effect?
No. Because when I did the first game, Portal, they had a computer-generated voice and for the audition. They sent a sound file and said, okay, match this computer-generated voice as closely as you can. I'm assuming I got the closest. So then when I did get the gig and went into the studio, they played my initial lines for me to listen to before I recorded them with this computer-generated voice, and I was supposed to sound like that. And so that's what I did. Now, the reason that they had to get an actor to do it is because the computer-generated voice was copyrighted, and it would have cost them something. So it was cheaper to hire an actor to do it. So
right. But that's still
so I didn't realize it was going to be processed. Now, of course, when the game came out and I, you know, heard snippets of it, etc., it was like, oh, you know, they've processed my voice, you know, and I don't know the equation of the exact processing, but I think that's out there because I, you know, other people have taken my voice and processed it so that Ellen sounds like GLaDOS. So,
yeah,
but I didn't know.
There is a program that you can use to put that robotic voice on anyone, really. Basically, if you record yourself and you use this program, they can kind of sound like you. But how were you able to get those nuances of the robotic voice? Because it kind of, it's quite exacting in terms of how it goes up and down.
I just listened
to it. I want to show you something, you know. So
I just listened to it, and it is, you know, it's pitch, but it's also, you know, the word that I remember being different was it's almost two syllables for aperture. Aperture science. They're two little as at the beginning of that word, and there are other words that were like that as well. And those I, you know, just kind of hooked into to try for the rest of the pronunciation that I heard. So. You know, it was fun. I liked doing that voice. That voice was lots of fun because, you know, I really did sort of listen to it in a musical way so that I was recreating this little line of melody that I heard. So it was fun. But of course, you know, after I lost the morality chord, GLaDOS, after GLaDOS loses the morality core, then I had to come up with a different voice. And, you know, we were in the studio. I hadn't worked on anything. We were in the studio and I was just trying stuff. Eric Wolpaw was there. Of course, Bill Van Buren was there, who was the I would say the primary producer. Kim Swift oversaw the whole game of Portal, because she, of course, was one of the students that Gabe Newell hired directly out of DigiPen, because Narbacular Drop. Jeet Barnett, Kim Swift, and a couple other people, developed this student game that Gabe Newell adjudicated as their senior project, and then just hired them right on the spot.
That's amazing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But you know, it's other things have happened sort of like that. I'm trying to remember the actress's name, but when Leonard Bernstein and Harold Prince were going to do a new production of Candide, Bernstein's musical, Candide, with musical. You know, it was done for the first time at New York City Opera, and really the whole show is really more like an operetta, because there's a lot more music than dialogue. But when they were going to do a production for Broadway, you know, and Bernstein was looking at the show with Harold Prince to shorten it, quite frankly, a young woman at, I believe it was Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, just wrote Bernstein and said, "Hi, I would love to play Cunegonde in your new production of Candide." And I think he said, "Sure, come audition." She went and auditioned and she got the part. And I remember, I'm blocking her name, but I remember meeting her at an audition in the 80s and just walking up to her and saying, "I just think it's so wonderful what you did. That was just such wonderful chutzpah that you just knew that you could do this role, and you wrote Bernstein and boom. You got it. You convinced him." You know, she was still a student in school.
So did you take that on board when you were voicing anyone? Not just GLaDOS, but any of that stuff?
You know, the whole idea of you have to trust yourself. You have to trust yourself. And you throw things out there. You know, in the studio for this new voice for GLaDOS, after the morality core is gone, you just throw stuff out there. It's kind of like throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. And you can't be shy. And that's one thing, I am not shy.
Yeah, you don't seem shy.
No, I'm not. I used to be as a much younger person, but I got over that pretty quickly. I'm not shy. It's a waste of time. You know, all they can say is no. Yeah. They can just say no. That's all.
Yeah. So what was the dynamic like in the studio with Bill and Eric?
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. Kim Swift and Eric Wolpaw and Bill Van Buren and the engineers at Pure Audio. Scott was I think the primary engineer at Pure Audio, which was an independent recording studio in Seattle, where Valve did all of its recording in the beginning. You know, they have their own studio now, and it's wonderful, you know, state of the art. But back then, they didn't have their own studio, and so they'd go down to Pure Audio. Lots of laughing, and just you know, wonderful creative energy. And, you know, I count all of these people as friends. They're really friends of mine, because I got to work with them so much, you know, not just on Portal and Portal 2, but on Team Fortress 2 and Half-Life 2 and Left 4 Dead, 2 and Dota 2, all these twos.
Well, maybe there'll be a 3 at some
yeah.
point. Did you have you ever advocated to any of them since they're friends of yours? You know, like, oh, hey, is there going to be a Left 4 Dead 3 or a Portal 3?
And I've talked to I always advocate for more work. It's like, yeah, hire
good
me.
Good on you.
Hey, give me another project. Hire me.
Because I know when I spoke to Eric a while back, and he really wanted to do a Portal 3.
I know. And I've spoken to him since I thought that was a wonderful interview. And I thought it was great seeing him at his cabin in West Virginia. And that beard.
Yeah,
oh, my God. He never had that beard.
That's a guru beard, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And he's such a wonderful person. I love Eric. He's loving and funny and so clever and so well read. And it's so wonderful when I would be reading the dialogue, I would hear references to other things. And I'd say, Eric, is this, you know, from? And he'd say, oh, yeah. He's incredibly well read.
So what's the dynamic between you and him? And in terms of, like, after you did Portal, did it continue to grow, that dynamic, that relationship?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was interesting. Usually a voice actor is one of the last things to be added to a game.
Right.
Everything else happens first, and then they bring in the voice. But with Portal 2, since the creators, you know, the people who planned and developed and designed the levels for Portal 2 and the story, et cetera, were so used to hearing my voice that they brought me in at the very beginning of the process, because they didn't want to listen to anybody else, because usually they'll have somebody in the company just as a stand-in voice, which they know is going to be replaced. But they didn't do that with Portal 2. They had me in from the beginning. And as the game was developed, the story changed. And this is very unusual. For a period of about 10 months, I went in to the studio every other week, sometimes every week, but every other week, and recorded things. Well, the session was never longer than 4 hours. So, but sometimes it would be an hour session, sometimes 2 hours or 4 hours, depending on how much copy they wanted me to record. So I saw those guys a lot, and Jay Pinkerton and Chet Falasek, and it was wonderful. I love working, and I was working all the time. It was great. And the thing is, while I was doing that over that 10-month period, I was also in a stage show. I was, you know, doing a show 7-8 times a week, you know, in rehearsal for it, in the studio. So I really was working all the time, but I was much younger then. So I had the energy.
Yeah. Were you ever doing multiple roles at the same time? So you're in the booth and maybe voicing for another game of Valve's? Were you doing like one role at a time and then you move on to the next one?
Well, I did Half-Life 2 first. And then after that, I did Team Fortress 2. But I think that, you know, Team Fortress 2 is a game that they kept adding to. And I don't remember. I may have gone. So while Portal 2 was being developed, I may have gone in, a couple of times to do stuff for Team Fortress 2. I just don't remember, Reese. It was a while ago.
Does any of that stuff ever get monotonous? Like, because you're in a studio for so long,
No.
and well, because you'd be standing in one place or sitting, I
Right.
suppose. Yeah, in one place, but so your energy never gets low. You're always
Well,
high.
you have to stop and drink water
Of
and go to the bathroom and
course, yeah.
so but the work is so interesting for me that no, you sure don't get bored. The thing is, I never get bored. I haven't been bored since I was about 10 years old. There's always stuff that I like to do. I like to take walks. I like to read. I read a lot. And I don't get bored. I don't get bored.
That's good. What's the key to not getting bored? Staying busy, I suppose.
Not necessarily staying busy, but having things that you're interested in. Like I said, I'm a big reader. I've got like three different books going right now. I've got one called The Passion of the Western Mind, which is sort of an overview of how Western thought developed from the Greeks to now. And then I'm reading a book that came out about in 2015 by a Russian writer, which is talking about the time in Russia around perestroika. And it's talking about, the history of Gorbachev, into Yeltsin and the putsch. I don't think I'm pronouncing that right, but when the more right-wing people kidnapped Gorbachev and Yeltsin stood out in front of the parliament building and climbed up on a tank. And that period of Russian history, which I think is so important to what's happening now with Putin, former KGB agent invading Ukraine. And the reasoning that he purports to believe in, why he's doing this. And I wanted to understand it better, so I thought it would be, there's much about, the Soviet era and how that developed. And of course, I remember Khrushchev very clearly, and I remember Khrushchev taking his shoe and pounding on the podium at the UN. And but through that, once the Soviet Union fell, it was chaos in Russia, absolute chaos. And I wanted to understand that period better. And then I'm reading the third book that I've got going is called Piccolo is Black, and it's by a young writer named Jordan Calhoun, who is a friend of my nephew. And it's pretty much about the 90s, and it's about people who sort of came of age in the 90s and what they think about things. And I thought, well, I'm reading it because, Jordan's a friend of my nephew, Alessandro. But also I thought, yeah, I'd like to know how this group of people sort of as a generation are thinking. So, it's just being interested in things.
Yeah, well, it seems like you carry a lot of knowledge and wisdom, and I suppose that would influence your work as well.
Well, sure, because an actor, I believe, brings their whole intellect, emotional life, you know, feelings to any project. You know, you bring your whole self to the project. And, you know, we all have everything in us. I've never been pushed to the point of murder in my own life, but I'm not saying that it couldn't happen under certain circumstances. You know, if I had to protect myself or protect someone that I loved, you know, because I've had murderous dreams. In my dreams I've murdered people.
Is that a result of something you've read specifically, or is it a visual image, or is it just something you've always had?
Well, I don't have murderous dreams very often, but I have had them,
right?
Where I've murdered someone in my dream. It was someone who was chasing me. So in my dream, they were trying to injure me, and I had to reciprocate.
So can you take anything from that and use it in a performance, or?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah,
because I know, so it's with James Cameron, he had a dream about a Terminator. And that's how that influenced him to make the film. So I'm wondering if that's the same case with you, like you're able to take something from that dream and use it in a performance, or I don't know, whether you speak to Eric and be like, hey, you should write a character like this.
Well, you know, Eric has plenty of ideas on his own.
Oh, he does. Yes,
so
he does.
I don't have to give him any ideas. But yes, you know, everything that has happened to me in my life, whether real or in dream state, yeah. I can use it. Sure. Mm. I'll use it.
So what's it like working with Valve compared to doing other types of voice acting? Like how are they different? How is the process different?
Well, I think when I first started working with them, you know, I was here in Seattle and they were a Seattle company. Mm. And it was kind of like, oh, I got a gig. Good. You know, and I just, you know, taking the bus down to Pure Audio and, you know, doing some recording. And it wasn't a particularly big deal.
Right.
It was just, you know, I'm an actor. I got a gig. I'm doing the work. And, you know, after Portal got so famous and popular, after that, and I think everybody, I know Eric and I have talked about it, is that, you know, for Portal 2, there was a lot more pressure felt because, oh my God, you know, Portal was such a hit, you know, how do we live up to that?
Hmm.
There was more pressure felt, but you know, you still have to do
it delivered.
I think so. And you know, even you know, Jonathan Colton wrote Still Alive for the Portal game.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, how things happen. Kim Swift was a Jonathan Colton fan. And Kim Swift, you know, sort of introduced through, you know, Jonathan Colton has had a website for a long time. Kim Swift introduced Jonathan Colton's work to Eric Wolpaw. So then Valve contacted Jonathan Colton and said, you know, we want to work with you sometime. We want you to do something for us sometime. We like your stuff. And it just kind of fell into place that they decided that they'd have Jonathan Colton write a song at the end of Portal, you know, over the final credits. And then they thought, Well, wouldn't it be fun if it were GLaDOS singing the song? Now, they knew that I was a singer because I had told them. They had never heard me sing.
Right.
They had never heard me sing until I was recording Jonathan Coulton's song in the studio. And even then, I was trying different sounds. And for the song, it made the most sense for me to come up with this little boy soprano kind of a sound, sort of asexual, you know.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
that's what I came up with. And then, of course, they processed it. So that, you know, made it sound computery. But you know, that is a wonderful free creative process. It was like, to Jonathan, we like your work. You know, we'll have you do something. Oh, what about this? And he knocked it out of the park. Well, then for Portal 2, it was kind of like, well, we have to have Jonathan Coulton write another song. And I remember Bill Van Buren saying to me, he said, I think Jonathan's done it again with Want You Gone. He's done it again. And Want You Gone is a great song. But of course, the other thing that I loved recording was the Turret Opera that Mike Moraski wrote. And all the vocal stuff that I got to do for the Portal game after most of the recording was finished. But I love the Turret Opera. I just love it. And Mike Moraski told me that he'd always wanted to write an opera. And was he sort of thought of it, this is, you know, oh, here's my opportunity to write an opera. And then and it was one of the artists who thought of the Turret Choir. And the first time I saw it, you know, at the Portal release party, Bill Van Buren took us into his office. John Patrick Lowry, my wonderful husband, and me took us in and played the end of the game for us. And all of us were in tears because to see these little turrets, you know, and all the little turrets sounds singing, that's me. It's all me, you know, juxtaposed into different ranges. And when I saw it, the little turret opera and the fat turret, because of course, you know, the opera isn't over until the fat lady sings.
That's right, yeah.
So the fat little turret, who's the soloist with her backup chorus, I mean, it is so brilliant and so wonderful and so unexpected, but so right. It put us into tears. Just John and I were crying. It was so beautiful. So I'm a pretty fortunate person. I've gotten to do a lot of fun stuff. So I shouldn't complain about anything, but I do.
Was it different? Did you have to approach a different method, I suppose, to singing compared to the way you'd usually sing with those songs? Or were you able to just, it was just another day at the office?
Well, the thing is, once I had recorded Still Alive, there was sort of a template for this is the way GLaDOS sings. But for Want You Gone, for Portal 2, I was able to incorporate the idea that she didn't have the morality core anymore. So, and the song is lower, just pitched lower. So that, you know, being a different part of my voice, gets a different sound. Then when I recorded You Wouldn't Know for Lego Dimensions. Of course, you know, Jonathan was with me in headphones for You Wouldn't Know. He wasn't in the studio with me, but he was, you know, he was talking to me the whole time. And I have, you know, my music from that. And I have so many notes on it. Jonathan wants this, Jonathan wants this, because he had emailed me before the recording session. And he says, this line means this, and this line means this. And he was very specific about the what the character was thinking for each line. But right. With You Wouldn't Know, the range was back up to where sort of Still Alive is. So I was, and I talked to Jonathan in the recording session about it. I said, and you know, we did several passes through the song and you know, and cut the song apart, you know, did the first verse and the second verse, the bridge, etc. But what he decided finally on using was sort of the GLaDOS sound that I had made for Still Alive. That, and we talked about it, you know, we had several hours in the studio to talk about, you know, what kind of sound he wanted. And what he ended up using was more the little boy soprano sound that I had done for Still Alive.
Ah, I see. So when you're recording this stuff, is it all out of whack in terms of the order of recording dialogue? Can you actually understand the gist of the story when you're recording stuff? Like, say, well, with Portal, did you know that GLaDOS essentially becomes the villain? She becomes villainous as the game progresses.
But I didn't know that at first.
Right.
And that was, you know, in the studio, I was like, what, Eric, what's happening here? And he said, you're lying to the player. You are lying to the player. Oh, I didn't get that. I thought I was just this prompt, you know, helping the player get through the game.
And then right. He said,
no, no. You're lying to the player. So even with Portal, I was recording things sort of in the order of the game. Not all the time, but sort of in the order of the game. And I remember, you know, my last recording sessions for GLaDOS for the Portal game, the first one, you know, Eric said, okay, she's really going crazy now. And that's, you know, when I did the cake recipe with all the weird things in it. And you know, and Eric was there, you know, and Bill Van Buren, you know, directing me. And because GLaDOS goes crazy before you kill her, before you murder her.
But would it have been a bit harder in the second one? Because there's obviously more secondary characters, right? Stephen Merchant and J.K. Simmons, who both...
Well, they played recordings for me of J.K. Simmons and Stephen Merchant. So once again, I was never in the studio with them, but I had their recordings. So I was responding to those actors' work, to J.K. Simmons and Stephen Merchant, who are fabulous actors. Just fabulous. You know, John and I are enjoying so much. Stephen Merchant has a program called Outlaws, and it's a wonderful show, and they just released the next season, and we haven't started it yet.
What's
his name? The American actor is, well, Stephen Merchant is in it, but also, why can't I think of his name? The American actor who, He was in Pennies from Heaven, and he was in Hairspray, the movie with John Travolta. He played Edna's wife, husband. John Travolta was the wife, and he played the husband. Oh, why am I blocking his name?
It's
You'd
all right. These things happen.
know immediately.
I'm sure after this we'll probably both remember who you're
But
talking about.
he's playing a larcenous grandfather,
Ah, I see.
and it's wonderful. And his daughter, just doesn't trust him, and so he has ingratiated himself with his grandchildren, but now they're sort of questioning him, and it involves drug money and they are the group of outlaws, quote unquote, are on a work, community service work team, where they have been cleaning up a community center, and through circumstances they find this bag of drug money. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful show. And of course, Stephen Merchant is in it, but he's also one of the writers.
So you didn't actually get to meet him?
Nope, never have, never
Never have.
have.
So knowing that they were recording dialogue or they were going to be it, did it make you up your game, so to speak? Did it make you want to be like, "Oh,
Well,
I've got to really elevate this for the sequel."
I always want to do my best work. I think one always wants to do
Oh,
one's best
of
work.
course, but is there sort of, I don't know if you call it a competitiveness or, I don't know, like sometimes knowing that a specific name is attached to something can motivate you more than it would sometimes. But I'm just wondering if you're that type of person or if you're just,
No, I think, you don't want to disappoint the fans.
well,
So
yeah,
many
that too.
people loved the Portal game that you don't want to disappoint the people who are going to be looking forward to playing Portal 2. So I mean I it's I can't be in competition with J.K. Simmons and Stephen Merchant. For example, the three of us are all so different.
Oh, yes,
How
of course.
could we compete with each other? It's like, for one thing, I'm a woman, but also Stephen Merchant is this, tall string bean, and J.K. Simmons is this, gruff authoritarian figure that he plays often. And the wonderful movie that he did about the basically it was about Juilliard, and he was the percussion drumming professor at
Ah,
Juilliard.
whiplash.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he was fabulous in that.
He
He was
was
fabulous in that. And
one of my favorite movies.
as someone who has had a conservatory training, I went to a music conservatory. I went to New England Conservatory in Boston.
Ah.
And I had a wonderful primary teacher, Barbara Wallace. Wonderful. She was like a second mother, and she taught me so much. She taught me so much about music and singing, but also about life. And so when I saw this movie Whiplash and J.K. Simmons playing this dreadful teacher, dreadful, dreadful, it really made me angry. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't teachers like that, because I know there are,
Have you been
but
any like
boy,
that?
yes. I shall name no names,
Of course.
but it's not a way to teach, because I've taught since 1987, and I take it very seriously. And you do not, well, you don't treat anybody like that. But you certainly don't treat one of your students like that. But it was a brilliant performance of J.K. Simmons. Brilliant.
Yeah, so I mean that's part of the reason why I asked, because you know you're up against these people, but it sounds like the only person you're competing with is yourself. But obviously both performances have gotten acclaim. This is why I think it's part of the reason why that people want to pull all three. They want to hear GLaDOS again, you know?
Well, write in, write email Valve. You've got my blessing. Say Ellen wants to do a Portal 3.
So you'd still have, I suppose, something in the tank to do it? Because you know how sometimes you can do a role and then after a while it can kind of get a bit stale if there's nothing challenging about it or something new about it.
Well, but I think that's the job of the actor.
Yeah, it is. I
Of
mean,
the
you've got to
actor,
find.
ha one has to have one's objective so clear. And even if that's self-imposed, an actor always has to know why they're saying anything. An actor has to know that, even if there isn't anybody in the studio, giving them very good direction. And I always got good direction from Valve. I always got, and always do. But even if you're not getting in, and listen, I've done a lot of shows. And again, I will name no names, but I have been in some projects where I didn't think the director was very good. It doesn't matter. The actor still has to do their job. The actor still has to know why they're saying something. And the actor has to know what they want. That's the thing. You have to know what you want. It's even like, early in our marriage, my husband and I have been married for over 35 years. And early in our marriage, I do all the cook. I do 99% of the cooking. And when he cooks, he dials the phone. That's when he cooks. But I remember early on, I had chicken. I was going to cook chicken, and I was tired, and I didn't want to cook. And I told my husband, "Well, there isn't time for rice." So that's one of our catchphrases through our marriage. He'll look at me and he said, "Well, is there time for rice?" Because of course it was a big lie. It takes, it takes 20 minutes to cook rice, from putting it in the pot to getting it boiling to covering it up and letting it, just heat slowly. It's 20 minutes. But I said, "Well, there's not time for rice."
Because you two were the bickering couple in Left 4 Dead, weren't you?
Yes, and they left me on the cutting room floor. He's in it. His voice is in it, but they cut me out. And that's the only time that we were in the studio together for Valve, because they didn't even know we were married. I remember there was a recording session for Team Fortress 2, and I was in there doing the administrator. And John was scheduled right after me for the hour after me. And I said, "Oh, you're going to work with my husband next." And they said, "Who's that?" And I said, "Well, John Patrick Lowry. He's your husband." So we had done Half-Life. I had done Overwatch and Half-Life, and he had done all the male citizens. They didn't know we were married because we have different names. And, we are with the same agency, the Actors Group, with Jamie Lopez, but they didn't know we were married. So Left 4 Dead, that they thought it was a great joke that they brought us in together and we improvised
I was going to ask, yeah.
bickering. And John's a great improviser. I'm not as good. But I do my best. But they cut me out.
Did
But
they say
I
why
am
they
the
cut you out?
witch. I do scream. I'm the witch.
Yeah, but
I
did they tell?
scream and sob.
But did they tell you why you were cut? Do you know why?
I'm sure that there were several reasons, probably mostly to do with the length of the game.
Right.
Because that's really why most things would get cut. And I remember, having to, this line can only be 3 seconds. This line can only be 2 seconds. And so I would have to record so lines would be fast enough. So,
Did
but
you add
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
lib much on in the Portal games?
No.
Or was Eric more like, hey, stick to the script?
Well, the thing is, Stephen Merchant and J.K. Simmons are wonderful improvisatory
Yeah, well this is the thing.
performers.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of what they improvised in Portal 2. Not so much me. The only thing I remember is what I did improvise is all the stuff I recorded for Mike Moraski. I just sort of improvised Italian on the spot. And for Potatoes, I improvised, faux Latin. There are actually some real Latin words in it, but it's kind of faux GLaDOS Latin. And I remember too that at one point they had wanted GLaDOS to sing Happy Birthday. But at that time, Happy Birthday was copyrighted, so they couldn't use Happy Birthday. So I think we came up for he the tune was "For He's a Jolly Good Fellow," etc. And I think that I sort of hummed it. And I had a few words that I think I improvised, and I remember in the studio that we just kind of, did different things. Now, for the turrets, I think that I did a little bit of improvisation because there's so many little turrets that, my favorite turret, of course, is "I'm different." So but they're the turrets on the conveyor line, have several different things to say, and they were written, but I think I improvised a few of those.
So how did the phone call go when you got called back to do Portal 2? Was that just a random phone call or an email you got out of nowhere saying, hey,
Well,
we're bringing you back?
well, I got an email from my agent. I got an email from Jamie Lopez, and that's how they contacted me. It was all through Jamie. And and Jamie always writes, "Well, they're bringing you in, and what's your availability the week of August 2?" And so then I'd go to my calendar and say, "Okay, well, I'm available here, not here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." And then I'd get another email saying, "Okay, so hold this time for Valve." And then sometimes that would change, and but it was always through Jamie. And but I remember when I did Gypsy Danger for Guillermo del Toro's film Pacific Rim, I was very nervous about that. And I called Bill Van Buren because I didn't have any of my, excuse me, I've got a little
Hiccups.
hiccup.
That's all right.
I didn't have any of the just raw GLaDOS recordings. And so Bill I've still got the little thumb drive. It's my blue thumb drive. And on it, Bill put raw recordings of my GLaDOS recordings so I would know what to do in the studio. And Bill Van Buren was very helpful when I worked with Guillermo del Toro for that film, because I hadn't done GLaDOS in a long time, and I wanted to give del Toro my best stuff. And Bill was very helpful with that, getting me raw recordings.
So do you still have a lot of work these days? Do you still get a lot of offers? Or enough? Enough.
Things come through. I mean, I was very honored to be asked to record a song with the Chalk Eaters. And I don't know if you've listened to that. It's on YouTube. It's the Chalk Eaters page. They're a music group, and they've done a song called Count to Three.
Okay. I haven't heard it, but I'll go listen
Oh,
to it.
Reese, you have it, it's
I'll go
wonderful.
listen
It's
to
a
it and
wonderful, wonderful, clever song. And there's a cameo from Gabe Newell. And I am on the song, and it was wonderful getting to do that. I was so pleased that the Chalk Eaters
how do I not know
asked me.
this? I should know this.
Well, Chalk Eaters, Chalkeaters, and the song is called Count to Three.
Okay. All right.
And then I, not too long ago, did something for Cyber. They wanted GLaDOS again for Cyber something, Cyber 570, Cyber 530. It's Cyber some number. And I'm the voice of the taxi cab. So, and that was GLaDOS. And, things pop up. John and I did an opera in June for Seattle Opera for their Creation Lab, which is a program that they have for young opera composers and librettists. And we did a new short opera based on the Orpheus and Eurydice myth. And that was a wonderful project. We loved working on that with the composer Daniel Whitworth and the librettist Sheila Houlihan. And of course, earlier that year, this year, so we did that in June. In September, Sheila and I did a live stream of Night Mother on Twitch, and it's a play by Marsha Norman, and we did cut it because the play came out in the early 80s, won the Pulitzer Prize for drama, I think in 84, and it's a full evening, and we cut it down to an hour, and my husband directed us, and Trevor was our wonderful director of photography, and we did filming for sequences in the characters' memories, which were also fed into the live stream. And we did that in September. So, there's always something happening.
It's good that you're still getting work. I mean, a lot of people probably don't know this, right? You're synonymous with GLaDOS, but obviously you've done a lot of stuff outside the gaming world as well. Yeah.
Yeah, mostly.
And you're
Mostly. I've
multi-talented.
done lots of music theater and lots of opera.
Does that help kind of rejuvenate your spirits, the fact that you can do voice acting and then you'll go and do a musical, and then theater, and it breaks everything up, so you're not doing the same thing. You're not constantly in the studio all the time.
Well, I just like to work. I like to work. I like rehearsing. I like preparing things. John and I, we also did during the pandemic, we did a streamed concert for a local theater company, Showtunes, which is a local theater company here in Seattle, and we streamed a concert live. And that was wonderful putting that together. The artistic director, Nathan Young, who is a good friend, and also Alex Robinson, who was his assistant, who actually came up with the idea and said to Nathan, "You know, you should get Ellen and John to do a show together because they're married. So with these, you know, COVID protocols, it won't matter because they can infect each other." And but we
Good way
didn't,
of looking at
but it was okay because we were married.
Wow. So final question before you go. Out of all your performances, is there one that sticks with you the most?
Well, of course, I'm most known for GLaDOS,
Of
and I
course.
love GLaDOS. But I loved doing opera. I really loved it. And you know, roles, you know, probably my favorite role was Susanna in The Marriage of Figaro. I loved doing that. And I did a few different productions of that. And then I've also played Marcellina, which is, you know, the mother of Figaro. She you don't know that at the beginning of the opera, but you find out, you know, Marcellina is trying to marry Figaro because he owes her money, and she says, you know, if you marry me, you don't have to pay me back. But then they find out that she's his long lost mother. It's a wonderful part. So I love that opera. And then, you know, in music theater and theater, I've done some wonderful roles. I loved doing August Osage County by Tracy Letts. That is a brilliant play, and I loved playing the mother in that. That was a big workout, and I it's very hard. I think most actors are in love with the projects that they're involved with at the time. And that's as it should be. Because you want to give 100%.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. But every project is 100%. You give 100%, don't you? So,
Yes.
wow, any actor should.
Yes. Well, I like to. It's like, why bother? If you're not gonna try for your best work, why bother at all?
Well, I very much agree. You should be always improving. Are you your own worst critic? Do you look back at your performances and be like, oh, this was terrible? Or, oh, this was great? Or, I would have changed this? Or.
I don't like, I don't mind listening to recordings of myself, but I don't really like watching videos of my performances. Because I don't know, I am. I it's not that I'm critical, it's that I can't read my work with any kind of objectivity. So I remember I did a film called Winning Dad, which is a wonderful independent film that was that we shot here in, I guess, 2011. And I remember going to the screening, and we were in a number of film festivals, but we were also in the Seattle Gay Film Festival, whatever, something like that. And that's when the first time I saw it. And I had to ask my husband afterward. I said, "Did I do okay?" Because the other actors in the project, I could look at their work objectively and make, decisions about what I thought worked and what didn't. But I couldn't with me. I couldn't be objective. It just didn't make sense. So I had to ask my husband, was that okay? And he said, "Oh yeah, Alan, that was good."
Reaffirming for you. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, hey, I'll wrap up there. Alan, this has been amazing. Thank you for taking time out. It took us a while to get here, due to some circumstances on my end, but thank you for being patient with me.
Oh, no problem.
Now, if anyone wants to keep up to date with what you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, my husband posts all the time. And so I think, if you look at John Patrick Lowry on Facebook, he's always posting, what we've got coming up. We had a wonderful time at Närcon in Linköping, Sweden. We've just been back from that shortly, and that was great. And then we're going to do Power Up Con in South Bend, Indiana, in a couple of weeks, last weekend of August. And then we're going to be here in Seattle at PAX West over Labor Day weekend. And so John Patrick Lowry, he always posts what we're about. He's much better on all that than I am.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, I'll leave it there. Thank you so much. I'll be looking forward to seeing you on Portal 3 when it happens.
Me too.
All right, well, that is the show, everyone. Make sure you share, like, and subscribe. And until next time, stay safe.